I heartily endorse this event or product.
Hello, everybody, or ahoy hoy, as I should say. Welcome to the Talking Simpsons live show.
Yes.
Tonight, everyone is a little bit Irish, except, of course, for the gays and the Italians. I am your host, rum-running hoodlum Bob Mackey. And who is here with me today?
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and I suck like a fox.
It's true. So, like, I assume everyone here is familiar with our show. Is anyone not familiar with our show? Oh, I've got some people here. So we are Chronological Exploration of the Simpsons. We do a podcast every week. We've been going in order since 2015. Right now we're in season 7, and we do an episode for every episode of The Simpsons.
We're about to hit the 138th episode spectacular, so I know we've been doing it for 138.
And today we decided to do the episode Homer versus the 18th Amendment because it is the St. Patrick's Day episode, and it's all about beer and laws.
Yeah, we're moving out of chronological order here for this one, but it felt just perfect for our St. Patrick's Day episode. Though this one missed St. Patrick's Day in its original airing by one day.
Yeah, so what, we are now 21 years away from this episode?
I know, it was the 21st anniversary yesterday. It's wild that it was. If only it could have been the 20th anniversary, it would be even more meaningful today.
So are there any actual Irish people in the bar tonight? Wow.
Woo!
They let Irish people in bars now?
Yeah.
That seems like a mistake.
They need not apply.
Is this place insured? I think. I hope so.
But this, you know, a little upfront patter here, folks. This has been quite a busy week for us.
It's true.
The Talking Simpsons group. We launched two different new podcasts. The What a Cartoon and Talking Futurama. You guys listen to that one yet? Yeah.
Whoa. Ooh,
all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We definitely got a bunch of new signups, so if you're one of the new signups to the Patreon, thank you very much.
Should we tell them where to go?
Oh, sure. Well, patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, where you get every episode of that. No, I should save that for the end there.
Frankly, look, it's too much content.
I can't do it in two breaths now. It's honestly too much to list.
Yes, it's a lot. So do you want to get into it?
Yes, let's get right into it. Homer versus the 18th Amendment. So we can't do any sound effects of this one, but maybe we can all imitate it together.
Yes. That'll take attention away from us and our bad Simpsons impressions. So, today's episode aired on March 16th, 1997, and just like on the podcast, Henry will tell us what happened in real life on this day. Wait a minute. I want everyone in the audience to scream, oh my God, because we don't have the clip, so let's do a countdown, 3, 2, 1, and then oh my God. 3, 2, 1.
Top of the morning to you, Bobby. This week, the Fifth Element is still at the top of the box office. Tekken 3 arrives in arcades so cheaters can play as Eddie Gordo. And animation nerds are changed forever in America with Cartoon Network launching Toonami this week.
These are all big events in the lives of nerds.
Yeah.
So, number one, is it the invention of the sexy baby woman? Like the, I think it's called sexy at birth. I forget. What is the trope
of
the sexy baby woman?
I know what you're talking about, but yeah. I do not know the name. I don't have TV tropes open in front of me,
damn
unfortunately.
It.
But yeah, Toonami originally started as a Space Ghost spinoff, at least. Or like Toonami was like more famous. When Toonami started, like, Moltar was more famous than anime in America, so they had him hosting it instead of, but then they just made up a dude who's voiced by the Cowboy Bebop guy,
yeah,
Steve Bloom.
Whatever his non-union name was. And actually, I apologize, it was not Born Sexy, it's Born Sexy Yesterday.
Oh.
Yes. It's a gross trope. Look
yeah,
it up.
But Toonami was such a big deal. Like, it, Gundam Wing really helped it out. We got that's what made it truly anime when it launched. It was like Thundercats and Voltron. And I remember my reaction being, "Oh, I thought Voltron looked way better than this."
It's the first time you knew your childhood lied to you.
It was when it hit me that nostalgia was a lie. But
so what are we doing?
Yeah, let's.
No,
play
no, this it. Is still yeah. funny. I just watched it. So do you want to talk about the subject matter of this this episode? It's about Prohibition.
Yeah, so it's Prohibition, John Swartzwelder written one, so it's a very old-timey style one. He really specializes in that, and this one is really like a combination of both versions of the Untouchables, like the old TV show starring Robert Stack and the Brian De Palma movie starring Kevin Costner.
We kind of have to do a lot of work finding references, but with this episode, there's only one.
And it's right in your face, just slamming you right there.
Like, you can't miss it.
L.A. Mass, and it's right. And what's so great about this, too, I think, is that Swartzwelder, he's such a, this is what he's so good at in his books, too. If none of you guys have read the John Swartzwelder books, which they promote every commentary of The Simpsons for his, they're like, buy his book. But they are really good. I would suggest either The Time Machine did it or Earth versus Everybody.
Now there's like 40 of them.
He's kind of never stopped. It's gotten to be too much. I stopped after the sixth one, but they're really fun. And the main character, Frank Burley, is basically a combination of Rex Banner and Homer Simpson as a detective.
I think it's like a sort of a Homer who understands his limits and place in the world, unlike real Homer who is kind of delusional.
But this one also, like, the animation is great. Directed by Bob Anderson, and this is the first time they've done St. Patrick's Day. They are finding one of the few they hadn't done to this point, holiday-wise.
It's true, but this is not the first time they've used the Simpsons episode to brutally assault the Irish.
Oh, no.
With the worst racism you've seen on TV.
Well, because in the clash of staff, like Al Jean, one of the showrunners, he's of Irish descent, so he made a ton of Irish jokes in the show. I mean, the guy's like, and you did a fine job of it too.
Right, the sad old Irishman there to comment on how he was beaten long ago.
He was fine with the beatings. He was fine with being racially profiled and beaten on Whacking Day.
He took it with good humor.
And I remember this all came into focus for me when the 600th episode aired, the Irish Times, they did a celebration of The Simpsons in Ireland, and it was just all defamation of Ireland, like 10 entries in a row. I wondered why. Obviously, they did take it with gentle good humor.
I guess they'd have to. Mm-hmm. So I guess this episode starts with just an exploration of what is happening on St. Patrick's Day in Springfield. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, go into the whole pinching ritual, which I never experienced Catholic school, because you had to make room for the Holy Spirit at all times, and that even included pinching.
Pinching was too sexual.
Yes, it could lead to other sorts of grabs.
I was worried about it today. That is why I wore green shoes and a green shirt.
Yeah, I have green shoes. Nobody better try anything.
No, back off. Back off, folks. No, I had that on an elementary school, going there and coming in and realizing, like, oh, I didn't wear green. And I was subject to many pinches, but I didn't, fortunately, have a sibling like Lisa who instructed people to pinch his legs.
You're lucky it's also not opposite day, Henry, because you are trying a lot with this green.
It's a little try-hard, but I still had to have room for my Talking Simpsons shirt, which I see at least one of those out there. Thank you.
Available for $28.99.
$19.99.
Oh, geez. That's how much I sell them for out of the trunk of my car.
Wait a minute. Well, yeah, I love the joy in Lisa's face when she says, like, nobody's pinching his legs.
Yes,
like,
finally, Lisa gets revenge.
She's getting to bully him back for all the things she's done to him.
And meanwhile, the adults are all ready to drink, clearly on a weekday.
Yeah, it's St. Patrick's Day because they're going to school, so you know it's a weekday, which means Homer and everybody else just took today off to go drink at 9 a.m. Or they're there before 9 a.m. to start drinking.
Yes, and even kicking down a back door was not enough. There was a metal door following that.
I love how Lenny just matter-of-factly says that, of just like, we kicked down the back door, but there was a metal one. Admitting that he destroyed the door to Moe and thinking it's fine.
That's probably one of several hundred doors drunks have kicked in at Moe's.
Moe's pretty used to it at this point.
Yeah. Do we get a lot from Barney in that scene?
Not really. Barney is kind of light. For an episode that's all about drinking, Barney is lightly used.
Yeah.
He gets about like 10 lines in this, but there's multiple lines where Barney could have said them, and instead it's Lenny or Homer.
I think he doesn't stand out because everyone gets as drunk as Barney in this episode, including Bart later.
Well, that's probably how alcoholics feel on St. Patrick's Day. They're just like, you posers, you're coming in on my territory.
I mean, I enjoy the occasional snifter of wine at Christmas, but St. Patrick's Day is sort of like the Staples manager who rides his Harley to a different Staples on the weekend. He's faking it. Mm-hmm.
I also, I did love that Mo has definitely poisonous green dye. And he doesn't, the poison sign cannot be a lot wider on that green dye. But I'm shocked he's even putting in the work to dye beer green.
There's no green beer here, which is good, because green dye only goes in shitty beer.
I mean, it just have a Guinness or something if you want to be real about it. I had a White Russian, which is probably the least Irish drink I could have today.
Is Lebowski, is that a Polish name?
I guess.
Okay.
Is that a stupid
The natural
name?
Enemy of the Irish.
And the and also, then we get to the big parade, which may as well be the Boston St. Patrick's Day parade. Just Springfield gets a little bit Boston there with Kent O'Brockman.
Yeah, in fact, Bostonians start invading his little broadcast tower.
I love that. Well, so his line about the gays and the Italians, that's partially about, we kind of covered it before, but the gays not being allowed to march in the Boston St. Patrick's Day parade until very recently. They finally allowed the gay veterans in on it. So now they do get to be a little bit Irish today.
But you have to be a veteran?
Well, it was a gay veterans group that was being turned down and finally allowed in. I'm not saying, like, that just shows you how much they were against the gays. Like, even veterans who you think they do anything for, like, nope. Being gay outstrips being a veteran in that case.
We get a lot of great floats in this parade, though.
Yeah.
To 2,000, this is not a typo, 2,000 years of Irish cops. And like, I imagine them being around at the time of Jesus.
Yes.
Were they shillelaying Jesus?
I mean, they were at least being cops in Ireland, perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where they were beating people with their clubs.
I don't know what happened.
With it.
Yeah.
and also the history of Irish writers of Springfield. They're all like different versions of James Joyce, I think.
Yeah, or William. Is Faulkner Irish? I don't know.
You're the English major here.
Yeah, I failed.
I have to defer to you. I'm sorry.
My knowledge is failing me. But we also, the parade gives us a good look into the sadness of Marge Simpson as well.
Yes, that she, well, first off, that she has dyed her hair green, so she is a big-time St. Patrick's Day fan. Though, as we all know, Marge has been dyeing her hair since she was 17 when she became as gray as a mule. So, I mean, it's not, she's just pretty used to it at this point.
But the it brings up so many emotions in Marge, like joy, excitement, and looking.
Looking.
Looking is now an emotion when your life is that small.
And I was definitely Bart at parades like that of asking a parent to buy me a thing that I would immediately throw away. Or at if we went to like the Ice Capades or the zoo, like if there was a light-up sword, which why would you even sell those at a zoo? But I would want that, and even though it would be broken immediately, like it was pointless. But I never bought a Vuvuzela like Bart.
Yeah, I think you use those light-up swords to taunt the giant baboons in front of the glass.
Yeah, they're cooler to see in the dark. That's why I like them more there. But the Vuvuzela, I didn't know what one of those were when I saw this episode. Who saw this when it originally aired? A few real folks out here. Did you know what a Vuvuzela was at that point? Because I certainly didn't.
We all became too aware of them at the World Cup like 8-10 years ago.
That's when I became aware of it, because I'm not a soccer fan, I'm not a sporto, but I wanted to possibly see the UK lose to America because I could rub it in the face of my UK bosses were it to happen. It did not. But when I watched the match, I just thought there was like a loud bees had been freed on the field or something. I had no clue what it was. And that it was just mystifying to me that it was just a constant drone. It wasn't even just like different horns. It was just that so many horns were being blown at once. It was just a constant like.
Well, I mean, the World Cup mascot that year was a cloud of bees. They weren't trying very hard.
Not the bees. Not the bees. Oh, yeah. So when the townies, basically the Bostonians invade Kent Brockman's stand, they all have the wicked pisser Bostonian voice, which I know, you know, with all the Harvard jerks that write for The Simpsons, I think they have a certain love/hate for Boston.
I think these are the people that were beating them up if they strayed too far from Harvard.
That's true. They're the townies who fucked with them. And they of course we get one of the classic lines of this episode, though not my line of the episode officially, but the saying like with a total disregard of what St. Patrick's Day stand for, all this drunkenness of being, is this what we think of when we think of the Irish?
But we do see an actual terrorist act taking place.
That's pretty wild to see that a fish and chip shop explodes.
And this is one of the few references in this episode, the John Bull's fish and chips. And I had had no idea who John Bull was, and apparently he is sort of the fat vest-wearing Uncle Sam equivalent.
Oh, I see.
He seems less threatening than the stern old man pointing at you.
I know. I'm used to a stern old man just going, "Come on,"
and saying he wants you,
instead of like some guy who just ate a bunch of beef Wellington or something. And just, oi!
He needs a good sit.
But also, the John Bull's fish chop was sort of a reference to, obviously, IRA bombings during the Troubles, as they call it over there. But there was at least one chip shop bombed during that. And that's why that scene, at least in original airings, was cut out of him in the UK.
That was their 9/11.
It was a little sensitive. I would get why they'd be sensitive about it, sure.
Yes. So this is the point. The catalyst of this episode really is Bart getting drunk. And they are very careful with how Bart gets drunk. In that there is a Duff float just festooned with sexy women spraying beer everywhere. And if you ask an animator to draw a sexy woman, they will go above and beyond the call of duty. Animators are infamously horny.
They do not need to be asked twice. Yes, they're like, yes, we got this. We have a dozen sexy women we've been waiting to draw.
In fact, I've already drawn it.
I mean, the Large Marge episode is all you need to know about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was a real fetish Marge season. We had... Large Marge, and then the episode where she got incredibly buff.
Oh, yeah, with Ruth Taylor.
Yes,
yeah.
But there was never an episode where she ate Homer and then gave birth to him, so they didn't go the full Monty.
I've got a pitch for season 30, man. Well, there is an episode coming up in season 30 where the title, they only revealed the title, but it is Lisa Has a Crush on Homer.
Yeah.
That's the name of it.
Like, they want you to hate it.
They are making us judge it already. It has to be illegal to spray beer on a crowd of people. Like, how do they not hit children with beer all the time? Like, Bart is not an isolated incident of a child getting drunk at that parade.
No, he's one of several, but we just see him. But
they do have to make it an accident because Bart. If it would be a very different episode if Bart stole beer and drank it willfully. It has to be an accident. The Bart will get intentionally drunk in the Simpsons movie. He gets drunk in the minibar, and it felt like them getting away with every joke they couldn't do on Standards and Practices. Homer flips the bird.
Yeah.
They say, I was mad they never said shit in the movie. I was like, come on, let one person say shit.
Well, it was PG-13. You do need a guardian.
I guess so, but we could see Bart's doodle.
That's true.
I mean, what about that?
All like three curvy lines.
but Bart walking around drunk, it was pretty good on Nancy. She doesn't get to do drunk acting all that much, and she only really voices 10-year-olds, but she had a pretty good time with that.
I don't know. Yeah, it's really good. I was thinking, actually, like, so they have to take a lot of steps to get him drunk, but in a few years, Bobby Hill would just chug a 40.
Really?
Yes.
Man, I forgot that episode.
Yes. Dad, I like beer.
Well, I also love the celebration. Everybody is having fun, including Kirk Van Houten, who, since we're skipping ahead, we haven't gotten to the divorce of the Milhouse family yet. And I was just shocked at first, like, wow, how is Kurt acting this way? Like, I forgot this is post-divorce. And his sexy 70s medallion is pretty nice.
Yeah, Apu wants everyone to get naked, but he quickly sobers up when the sight of a drunken child brings everybody down.
Yeah, we don't want everybody to get naked here, by the way. Don't do it, okay?
Please.
Just keep it calm down. In my memory, I thought Bart said, "What the hell are you looking at?" I thought it would have been a direct Duckman reference, but no such luck there.
The powerful Duckman lobby would have sued them.
And poor Marge looking so humiliated as Bart is caught for public intoxication. And then it goes straight to Kemp Brockman. That's always one of my favorite cuts where you're seeing a sad thing and then it goes straight to the TV and the news. It just speeds things up. It's a really cool way to do a time cut.
You have to think the town would know about Bart at this point, though.
He should be pretty used to him. I mean,
there should be just a segment on Channel 6 News about The Simpsons.
What Bart did, yeah.
You know his sister shot Mr. Burns? And now he's drunk?
I mean, they not too recently had a parade similar to this in celebration of Bart and his inner child.
That's right.
Which they copy that from, by the way, when they have the big fight, the big mob, they just reuse the mob from that. Which I don't blame the animators for that. It's hard to draw dozens of people fighting in a brand new way every time they ask for a mob.
It was a perfectly fine mob.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps the best. But so Marge is not the worst mother in the world, we learn. There is apparently a freezer lady in Georgia, and there's no real... I mean, of course,
I looked up some true crime stuff. I could not find a direct analog.
But the idea of being known as the freezer lady does put an image of children's corpses in freezers.
I imagine
is it just
children's
me?
Corpses in freezers. Okay. Yeah, I mean, what? I guess a nicer way, it's so vague, a nicer way you could read it as, like, maybe she just punishes her children by putting them in the freezer
yes.
and then lets them out. You know, it could be child abuse, not child murder.
My brain took me down a different route.
I know. I mean, I was thinking of the case of the 1995 Susan Smith case, which is too horrible to contemplate. So.
Yes, let's not bring up the grisly details here. There's a great South Park episode that basically reenacts that entire thing.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite Butter Zone episodes. That was a pretty great one.
And the temperance people, they approach Quimby's office, and he is anti-beer, and he has some good points about beer. It tastes great. It makes women appear more attractive and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
That is a very true thing. The more I drink, the less I'm ready to hear criticism about myself. Though I can pass a threshold of where then I'm like, I'm all ready to hear criticism about myself and cry. But I did forget in the shot inside Moe's bar when Homer is drinking and he's the Prime Minister of Ireland. There is a sign up that says, no Irish need apply, which lets you know that Mo has some very, like, ancient racism going on.
Well, we figured out Mo has to be in his 70s if in the 90s he's reflecting on being an original little rascal.
If he's an original little rascal, he must be 70. So, yeah. Maybe he's just had that sign up for, like, 30 years.
So, again, they're petitioning Quimby to get rid of beer, and Wiggum makes a good point. All of our founding fathers, astronauts, and World Series heroes have either been drunk or on cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Which is all true. Up to a certain point in history, I think everyone was just at least half drunk.
I would think so. I mean, I would think Babe Ruth never played a game sober, would be my guess. I would think anyone who has won a World Series has not done cocaine. And I also really like the... so this is the first appearance in chronologically, but the second of, won't somebody please think of the children, which is Helen Lovejoy's catchphrase. It was first used in Much Ado About Nothing, which, boy, the listeners who hate us talking about politics are not going to like when we get to that episode.
I see several one-star reviews in my future. I see the word cuck a lot, too.
Yeah, I mean, you are a cuck.
Oh, damn it. I'm trying to shake that reputation.
But won't somebody think of the children gag? I've never been the... It is funny, and it gives Helen something to do, but it I think even on the commentaries, they admit that these are the jokes of people, of writers who didn't have children at the time.
Yeah.
Who were just mad at women who, mean moms who wouldn't let them say dirty things on TV, and they would say, won't somebody please think of the children?
Or write a joke where an imitatable act doesn't happen. It's like, yes. I gotta write a worse joke so your kid doesn't die.
I just wanted Bart to be electrocuted. Damn it.
But,
and,
yeah, sorry.
Oh, no, and the temperance movement, too. No, so then when the magic clerk shows up to announce that there's actually a bit of parchment that has never been enforced.
And there's a lot of space dust on it.
Yeah, that's the amazing parchment that also appeared in the monorail, where they got to find out that the Chief Wiggum is owed two lasses of virtue true.
Yes, comely lasses.
Comely lasses, yes. What's the difference between a regular lass and a comely lass?
One is more comely. But yeah, so if he would have just read one more sentence, this episode would have ended.
Yeah, that's why it is such a wonderful, cheap, bullshit ending there. And actually, close to my line of the episode is right after the clerk says that, and then Wiggum there's mumbling reaction to it, and this is the first time I caught it where Wiggum just goes, shut up, clerk guy. Like, it's just a clerk guy. Clerk guy. It's so beautiful.
And so it is repealed. Prohibition is put into action. And
it happens immediately.
And we get one of the rare act breaks that's focused on Dr. Hibbert's wife, who is renamed. So originally in all of her former appearances, she was named Felicia, obviously based on Felicia Rashad, the actress who played Bill Cosby's wife in The Cosby Show.
Her
name is Bernice.
Bernice, named another Duckman reference, I swear.
They were trying to take Duckman down from the outside.
But yeah, like the Mrs. Hibbert had never been shown to be a drinker to that point. I think the joke is that she is just a secret alcoholic, and this is how Hibbert finds out. Meanwhile, you get to see the normal people: Homer, Barney, Mo. They're all passed out from it.
Well, Dr. Hibbert and his wife were both in Homer's weeding class.
Oh,
so,
yes.
Maybe that was the reason.
But if they had just dealt with their alcoholism first, they would have really figured out the core problem in that relationship. You know, I noticed in this episode, too, there's a lot of plot moves forward thanks to a newspaper.
Yeah.
They read, it's instead of Kemp Brockman, it's like there's five different times where like, oh, the newspaper announced something. The newspaper says the Beer Baron is around. The newspaper says Rex Banner's in town.
It's, yeah, it's very much calling back to that Untouchables era where it's like, this newspaper will do the plot for us.
Yes. Well, that's how, I mean, that's how John Swartzwelder works too. I know that Conan O'Brien, noted Irish Simpson writer, Irish American, he said that John Swartzwelder, if you dressed him up like a 1840s police officer, would be incredibly handsome. Like he is a man out of time. And so he, of course, wants to exist in a world where everybody reads newspapers instead of watching the television.
That's true. So they read spinning newspapers. It's much harder. So the second act begins with one of my favorite lines. So Duff decides to rebrand because people don't drink it for alcohol. They drink it for its robust taste.
Mm-hmm.
And they introduce Duff Zero, and they immediately close the plant. And the CEO...
30 minutes
later, the CEO says, well, that's the end of me. And I kind of say that after every mistake I make. But unfortunately, that is never true of real CEOs. They sort of like ruin, they will go and ruin another company.
Mm-hmm. We just saw that with Toys R Us. R.I.P.
Yeah.
Toys R Us. It is gone. But those CEOs, they turned out pretty fine. Like,
yeah.
they just pushed that debt onto another place.
Those 30,000 people can find other jobs.
But hey, at least in comedy, we can have that wish fulfilled of an executive like getting fucked over and being poor. And like, and yes, well, that's the end of me is just the greatest
line. I really wanted to see him like walk into the ocean like Moe's boss in the future episode.
They weren't gutsy enough yet to kill on screen.
Yeah, no on-screen suicides yet. We were still in the 90s, simpler time.
Then we get a very like Futurama joke, in my opinion, of the big sign that says 0.75 days without alcohol. That is a very math joke, which I would guess would mean 16 hours, right? No, that would be 2/3.
Listen,
let's do math live on stage here.
We're
folks.
Talkers. We're not mathers. Yeah. Wait, we have an answer.
What? It is 18. Okay, 18.
Very good. Yeah, I assume like some of the Futurama math dorks were still on the
staff. David Cohn was still hanging around.
Yeah. He has a, like, was that Ken Keeler has the degree in, like, fantasy math?
Oh, yeah, Ken Keeler, the mega math dork, who was at the time working on the Armin Tamzerian episode.
Mm, famously good.
But, yeah, it's for 2 whole hours, they Moe's bar is closed down, and then they arrive, and they're all drinking again. Moe is not hiding even a little bit. It's just, it's Moe's pet shop.
Yes.
Not even a lock on the door.
And this is when the Untouchable stuff really happens. So has anyone in this room actually seen the 1959 TV series and not the movie? One person, and I know that would be
wow.
the only person in this room to raise their hand about this question.
I
don't know where it ever aired, like on Nick at Night or whatever, but I just escaped me. But I'm aware of the Kevin Costner movie, which they referenced earlier in the series when Mr. Burns is trying to thrash a man with a baseball bat.
When he is going to beat a man within the inch of his life and then send a corsage to his widow.
Yes, but I have a great quote from our friends at Wikipedia, who gave me permission to use this quote about the series. So the show drew harsh criticism from some Italian-Americans, including Frank Sinatra, who felt it promoted negative stereotypes of them as mobsters and gangsters. Following that, Frank Sinatra had that writing staff killed.
Sinatra could get anything done back then.
I mean, the good thing about living post-Sinatra is you can make fun of him without being assassinated.
You're safe.
But not mafioso. Around Joe Piscopo.
No. Oh, God, Joe. He will be the governor of New Jersey. I feel certain of that. It's going to happen. But I watched the De Palma Untouchables. It's a pretty good movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kevin Costner is, like, pretty much the worst part of it. I at least love, like, De Niro gets to be, like, bald and fat and just screaming the entire time. Like, that's fun.
It was his first try at being Dirty Grandpa.
And
that's De Niro.
It is De Niro,
okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of dirty adults out there, but that's him. He's the Dirty Grandpa.
Yeah, so De Niro's Dirty Grandpa and Pacino is Dunkachino.
Dunkachino.
I measure them by their worst moments.
That's how everyone should be judged, by
yes.
their worst moments. And
only famous people?
Well, and speaking of Italian stuff, or Italian defamation, in Untouchables, I think that was the first time I heard the slur for Italians of WAP, and it's said by Sean Connery in a fun little scene about shooting a man who has a knife.
I think his accent would make that word fun.
Yeah. I'm so close to wanting to repeat it, but I don't want to.
But
you're trying to make me say a slur here, folks. I don't want that.
This could ruin Henry. So I wish we could show you this clip because it is one of the craziest animated clips I've ever seen in The Simpsons. And if you watch the commentary, Matt Groening like makes audibly pained noises. When Chief Wiggum, so we're at Moe's Pet Shop, and Chief Wiggum is dancing with Princess Cashmere, and it's not just under boob, it's most boob.
Yes.
It's like, again, animators. They're really horny. I can't stress that enough.
It's a Ralph Bakshi drawing of it, of just and it's this weird, like, when I say Ralph Bakshi, it really feels like just a cycled animation from Fritz the Cat of just step back, like it's just a two-step animation. And at first I wrote, like, oh, crazy, sexy woman there. Then when she stops dancing and she gets back on model, then I realize it's Princess Cashmere.
Oh, it's a person.
It's a person, but it's just so distracting. And I guess it definitely shows that Wiggum is at his lowest at this point.
Yeah, he left his family behind.
I know, it's pretty gross, honestly. Yeah. This episode wouldn't work as well for feeling bad for Wiggum if you... It would get too real if you saw, like, Ralph starving at home or eating newspapers.
They try to make you forget he's got a wife and a child in this
episode.
I know.
Well, especially, like, you have to assume he's not just dancing with ladies at Moe's Pet Shop.
I imagine there'd be some carousing as well.
Well, and speaking of great animation, the Wiggum charm and his strut toward Helen Lovejoy is pretty wonderful.
He's never been rounder. I feel like someone drew Kirby and then erased it and then drew Wiggum.
And just her screaming pervert, he doesn't say that's a bad word. He's just like, that doesn't sound good.
they do have to like sort of invent an old lady character. There are like a host of old ladies, but Henry, you found out which old lady it was. They pulled some random old lady from show history to be part of this movement.
It is true. So anybody else recognize the character model from previous in the show? Well, it is from the episode where Bart is born, when Homer is doing his door-to-door knife salesman and basically stabs an old woman with the knife of shake hands with Knife Co.
So up next, we get the introduction of Rex Banner, one of the greatest one-time characters before the show murders him at the end. And so this is performed by Dave Thomas, the actor, not the restaurateur and adoption enthusiast. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you might know him from SCTV, Strange Brew, Grace Under Fire, several things. Henry, anything else?
Well, he was really funny on the Comedy Bang Bang TV show playing Scott Ackerman's dad. I feel like I'm often the only person who ever watched that show, but it was really funny. It's on Netflix. I see somebody else raising their hand that they watch comedy. Okay, yay. Two people.
That's about the Comedy Bang Bang audience.
But yeah, Dave Thomas is great. The Bob Hope, I never even saw his Bob Hope stuff. He is apparently one of the best at Bob Hope.
Yeah, I think he was on Gilbert Gottfried. I had no idea he was sort of known for his Bob Hope, and he was like slagging on other people's Bob Hopes. He's like, no, this is the right way to do Bob Hope.
Man, that's a jealous Bob Hope impersonator right there. But he's a perfect hire for this. Like, he fits in the old man trope of the old men that they hire for this. So you had a theory about this casting, though, right?
Yes. Well, so they could have... I really think they could have gotten Robert Stack. So Robert Stack he did play Elliot Ness in the Untouchables TV series. Everyone in this room probably knows him from your nightmares, from Unsolved Mysteries. He was the spooky man. It's like, this family was just murdered, and they're just like your family.
I was so terrorized. My mom told me recently, I had completely forgotten this, that she said for like a year of my life, like from age six to seven, I made her check that the window was locked because I was like, no, on Unsolved Mysteries, that kid got stolen out of a window. That's going to happen to me.
And I'm pretty sure the theme music for that show was composed in hell, like directly in hell and then sent to Earth, because just the music would like make me panic. But then
terrifying.
I had to watch it. I couldn't turn away. So yeah, Robert Stack. Dave Thomas is doing a sort of mix between Robert Stack and Kevin Costner's version of Elliot Ness and Untouchables. And he said he thought it was funny that a tough character would have like a really like thin, reedy voice, like a very wimpy voice, which I can't do a Kevin Costner impression, but apparently he can, and it's pretty good.
Yeah. I can't think of what is a stereotypical Kevin Costner voice. Like Robert De Niro, that's an easy impersonation any of us can do.
He's one of the famous acting robots. So yeah, like I was surprised after learning about The Simpsons so much, I'm surprised they couldn't just get Robert Stack because three or four months earlier, he was in the Beavis and Butthead movie talking about, his main joke was cavity searches. Lots of cavity searches.
Cavity searches all around. Yeah, That's what he asked for.
He would not be against being on The Simpsons, but the reason why I believe Dave Thomas is doing this role is because Josh Weinstein and Bill Oakley, who ran these two seasons, were talking about one of their first writing gigs was the 1992 special, get ready for this, Inside America's Totally Unsolved Lifestyles, which was a parody of every reality TV show pre-Real World. So I guess, like, I don't know what the inside is from, but America's is from America's Funniest Home Videos. Totally is from Totally Hidden Video. Unsolved is from Unsolved Mysteries. And Lifestyles is from Lifestyles and the Rich and Famous. So these are all pre-reality show boom reality shows.
Perhaps the inside is from Inside Report.
Inside Report.
Inside Edition.
Inside Edition is just about Bill O'Reilly scowling at people.
I mean, yeah, but they're showing reality things. Fuck it!
Play us out! What the...
What is this? Right before they hire Rex Banner, too, I do love, if there's one thing John Swartzwelder hates, it's Democratic politicians. So Quimby's reaction of just calling the temperance movement women low-income nobodies and only choosing to do it once he's told there's an election in November while also saying he hates this country.
He hates democracy.
Yeah, again, I hate this country.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, but Swartzwelder is... They joke on the commentaries many times that he was like the libertarian troll of the Simpsons writing room of, like, after Bill Clinton got elected, they said he would brag to them of, like, oh, he's going to get hung from a tree eventually. That's what's going to happen to Bill Clinton.
And he started working from home when he could no longer smoke in the writing rooms. And then he would actually write from a restaurant, and when they outlawed smoking in that restaurant, he bought the booth he wrote in and put it in his house to write at.
Idiosyncratic is a way to put him, perhaps. But he is such a fun writer for this show, though. But yeah, so Rex Banner, something that hit me in this viewing me and you talked about it, Bob, is that I remembered this as Rex Banner being the good cop to Wiggum being a bad cop. But Rex Banner is actually just as bad as Wiggum. He's just more proactive.
He has more bravado. And yes. He can fake it a lot better, but he is as stupid as Wiggum and extremely credulous. And just kind of, he's only good at roughhousing people, I think.
No, he's a very violent guy, but not so much a good policeman. Not a very good investigator, that's for sure. But when his arrival of kicking Wiggum out of his chair and smashing his TV is quite an arrival, too, after finding out that his mother's dog had puppies.
Yes.
Daisy had puppies.
And he immediately lectures all of the cops, including, take that badge out of your mouth.
Yes. I love the line of Wiggum going, like, hey, I was sitting there, and I was watching that.
He's not realizing he's being replaced. It's just like, this man is being rude to me.
Well, he didn't even get his goodbye kiss, which he was waiting for.
That is police policy. It's in the union contract, one goodbye kiss.
But there's a great little animation tick when he's leaving that when Wiggum is walking out the door, he puts his hand on the door as he's walking out, like, to give a last feel of it, which adds a real kind of, like, wistfulness to Wiggum to it that wasn't needed, but it was just a great little extra in the animation.
Yeah, I mean, they want you to feel for Wiggum, who previously would beat anyone to death if he could. Yeah.
Or at the very least, if someone went missing, he wanted people to know he beat them to death, at the very least.
Rex immediately goes to work. He installs a barricade, which, again, if there's a car accident in The Simpsons, it can't just be one car.
No.
It has to be at least eight, and then they have to catch on fire.
And to see immediately how much bad of a cop Rex is, he does not give one shit that 16 cars just pile up in front of him. The bumpers and everything are just flying right by him. No change in his face.
And he does not mind that Fat Tony, who makes an appearance, will go back to smuggling heroin. He's got a real one-track mind.
This was a return of Fat Tony to the show after a while, back before they found out Joe Mantegna would just come for anything.
When was the last appearance before this?
I feel like there was a vague time in between. We're
was
going
it Homie
ahead,
the Clown?
But it might have been Homie the Clown.
Okay.
Yeah. They were pretty light on him until about season 9 or 10. Once he's milking rats, then we see Tony about every once a year, I'd say. But I also love right before that when Tony appears, Lou and Eddie get the money and they say, like, why do people have such a bad opinion of the mafia?
Yeah, they're so nice to you.
Yeah.
Homer was clearly enjoying Prohibition until the beer went away. Because that's sort of like how it worked in real Prohibition. It made beer more, it made drinking more exciting. Mm. Just like when you outlaw anything, people want to do it more.
Yes, and that is our libertarian stance as a podcast. No laws on anything. It's just laissez-faire all the way.
Yes, no government intervention.
But yeah, in other countries where there is a laxer drinking age or no drinking age, it feels more boring. Or at least when I've been in when I'm visiting countries like that, it's like, yeah, I guess I could drink.
Yes, those children need wine.
They need wine.
Yes, and this is where eventually I feel like the Simpsons family sort of drops out of this episode for a while, but it picks up with them getting the idea to dig up the buried beer at the landfill and start their own business.
It's a Bart and Homer adventure from then on, which almost, there's parts of this, Homer is very much jerk-ass Homer a bit in this episode. In my memory, I thought of this as more of a season 9 episode, because he's just happily committing crimes and not giving shit about anything and lying to Marge's face over and over and over again.
Destroying the house and the car and putting Bart in danger.
But also another reference explained the shadowy figure leaving a rose at the Duff Brewery every night, who's so obviously Barney is perfect. But that is a reference to the Poe toaster, which is the man who toasts Edgar Allan Poe with wine every year at the grave of Edgar Allan Poe.
I feel like Barney would just leave town if the beer was no longer there.
That's the thing in general in this episode. It is said that they're getting the beer from Shelbyville. So why doesn't everybody just move to Shelbyville? It's literally a step across the border to go there.
Yeah, drinking is more of a Shelbyville idea.
Though then again, the housing market must be really going up in Shelbyville during that. Maybe nobody can afford it.
Yes, so where are we? So Banner catches wise to Bart and Homer, right?
Well, yeah, so they're going to, after getting all the rats off of old beer, they then get all the beer barrels out. And that's when Rex Banner almost kills Homer, shoots right at him.
Yes, look how stupid he is holding that gun.
And they smash through the graveyard, and Homer here. Always, apparently, Homer thought it was okay to smash. It was good luck to smash over.
He heard good.
Yeah, and that's when right back to back he just lies to Marge's face.
Yes,
I don't remember the car looking that way. Before.
You're living in the past. Yeah, it's sort of like one of the many jerk-ass lines. It takes two to lie, one to lie, one to listen.
Yeah. I also love Homer's directive to Bart of you can't tell anybody, not your mom, not Rex Banner, not anybody.
Bart has regular contact with Rex Banner.
He could get on the horn with Rex Banner pretty easy.
It's very cute how so they start their rum running business in the basement, and they put up several signs on the door. And Marge's life is so small, and she sees a sign in her house that says "Don't go in here." She just takes it for granted. I used to be able to go down here.
Marge really follows the rules. And that's another. It's another perfect jerk-ass Homer line, but I do love the line of. Marge again is like, why do you have all these bowling balls? I'm not going to lie to you. Well, goodbye.
That is great. That's a real gut punch.
And Marge just accepts it, that he's like, he's not going to lie. He'll just withhold information. And what's stopping her from going down there when Homer and Bart aren't there? Only the rule that Homer put up the sign. She has to obey the sign.
That is true. She is like that. So the entire scam is that they fill the bowling balls with liquor or whatever. And
they're liquid field center ball.
Yes,
Homer
that's right.
Loves.
And they purposely are shit at bowling in order to get them all in the gutter.
We know that Homer is great at bowling. He just won a championship with Team Homer.
That's right.
But Homer is hitting a gutter ball every night, which based on the number of zeros, it seems they brought about 40 bowling balls with them at that point. And
yeah, I mean, it is a very, for as cool as this plan is, it's not very efficient.
No.
Which I guess is why later we find out a glass of Duff is $50.
It's the only way financially it can work.
Those are San Francisco prices.
And
this beer was pretty affordable.
Enjoying their beers tonight, yes. No. And I also, my continuity nerd theory here is that they hollowed out all the stuff that they had been using to get rid of old bowling pins at the Bowlerama, and that's where they put in all those tubes that go to the Moe's Pet Shop.
Yeah, I guess the part we don't see is them laying in all the elaborate tube work to make this happen.
I love watching things go through tubes. It's just, it's relaxing. I don't know what it is.
You should really get a hamster or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I think we catch up with Rex Banner at this point, and clearly not enjoying his banana kaboom.
I love that banana kaboom. It's
a great,
beautiful.
Yeah, especially because it has two sparklers in it, and he's just scowling at it.
And it cycles perfectly in gift form. It's just so
beautiful. A great gift.
It is a pretty bad birthday for old Rex Banner, I have to say. He's but also I like that Lou and Eddie just to me, like, they have no allegiance or loyalty to Wiggum. Once Rex Banner's in there, they're just hanging out with him all the time.
He's so cool.
And they're also eating in an Edward Hopper painting, too, if I must mention
is
more
that
references.
Nighthawks?
Yes, it is.
I saw a pop-up video once.
That's mostly where we got it from. Instead of sugar packets, we get it from pop-up videos.
That's true. My knowledge is only from pop-up video.
But his smashing I love the animation on Barney's lips going up and down on the hello fishies.
Yes, and the only thing that Rex Banner is good at is being a badass, so he just breaks the glass. And I like how it takes him a few grabs to pull Barney in. Yeah. Barney's just screaming. But yeah, so in case you want to know what a blind tiger?
Mm-hmm.
That is
a blind tiger filching hooch on the side.
Because I'm a loser and I read a lot of old books, I know a blind tiger is an illegal bar.
Mm.
So I guess speakeasies were once disguised as like animal curiosity museums. Hence the term blind tiger. Mm. I didn't make this up.
And
this
that
is
fits
all real.
With the pet shop as well there too. And
yeah.
Barney is so confused, but he at least goes, yes. he's being cooperative, Barney is, but he honestly doesn't know. And but who does know is Marge. She catches Homer in the act because Homer doesn't check that the coast is clear, and five steps in front of him is Marge.
Yes, but so his peripheral vision failed him.
And all the beer spills out, and I do like the turn there. Like, the obvious choice as a writer on the show, especially if you're somebody... Like, so we've seen Dana Gould say this live, so this is not like off the record stuff. Uh-huh. He said when he was a writer on the show, most writers hated writing for Marge and would make fun of her voice and say, she's just a boring nag, we don't like this. And so a normal Marge would have just like chewed out Homer right then of seeing that he had been lying to her the whole time. But instead that she's so impressed and she likes the money and all of the thievery, she's so impressed that it's the smartest thing, most clever thing he's ever done since she's known him for 20 years.
It is nice when Marge does get in on these schemes. Was it the Bobo scheme she was also in on too, because she wanted to get those double-sided windows?
Oh, yeah. She was fine with
that. Why can't I be greedy once in a while?
Why can't I be greedy once in a while?
But who is against the plan is Lisa, who I believe on the D&D spectrum is lawful good.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a law, and they must obey it.
Marge, I guess, on this would be like neutral good, and Homer would be, well, he'd be chaotic evil, I think.
Lisa's being a bad liberal.
I know, right?
Yeah, read Grapes of Wrath. There are bad laws.
Well, I mean, that would come up later in another very dark reference to something. So first, though, we get the raid on Moe's Bars, which that's another thing that happened in a million episodes of Untouchables, the raid on a speakeasy or other places, hiding the hooch, as it were. And I got to say, Rex Banner, again, he is as stupid as Wiggum because everyone hides their beer behind their back, and that's all he needed. He's like, yeah, everything's fine here.
Yes, and he does still feel like he's smarter than the crowd, though. He just gives a warning about buying pet turtles and alligators. They grow up.
They grow up, folks.
Yes.
I had that thought, too. Always watching Clarissa Explains It All. I'm like, she should not have a pet alligator.
There's a reason Elvis is no longer there. To try to attack Ferguson.
I would keep him at that point then. But that must have gotten in the way of her video game development. I forgot. This is now talking Clarissa. But I love... I love that it was something I forgot until rewatching it.
We're changing our show now, apparently.
It's something I forgot when rewatching it that she ended every episode with developing a video game.
Yeah.
It was such a cool concept, showing how creative that Clarissa could be. It was really cute.
And Melissa Joan Hart went on to star in God's Not Dead, too.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
If you thought God wasn't dead the first time, wait for the sequel. He's even less dead.
Now I'm certain of it.
Yeah.
I'm certain he's not dead. Another of my favorite lines in this episode is Moe's reaction to being called Curly.
Yeah. He's unaware of his own hair, but I do love his the best damn pet shop in town.
Yes, yeah.
And then everyone salutes. Does Rex Banner even see that?
No, he turns around.
Okay.
He's turned around, and they woo as soon as he turns around, and then he turns back, and they all put it back behind
him. Yeah, and Barney is so caught up in the rapture of alcohol, he does not even mind the many gears.
Gears really hurt.
How much money? I mean, Mo knows some guys. It's true. Like, Mo knows some guys. Like, how much did he spend on this? Were there contractors involved? It all was set up very quickly.
And he's got a lever right next to the front door. Anyone could turn at any time. There's no safety on that lever either.
None of these criminals want the coast to be clear. They're just They're too boastful.
It's such a beautiful thing, though, that I would think Mo lost all of his money on bootlegging and selling illegal beer, just rebuilding his bar to be two bars and transforming.
Yeah, it was this season he had already done that with the family feedbag.
That's true. Yeah, he's already lost the money on the feedbag. But then again, he does sell killer whales, so I think he's got some good money, I would think.
There is a panda in the back, so it's technically a pet shop.
Yeah, you know, that's true. It's more real than not. But then, so this is a line, actually, it never hit me until I looked at this on Frinky Act today. Rex Banner, it's one of the best scenes in the episode. Rex Banner was vowing he's going to catch the beer baron to the entire town of Springfield.
Won't.
Yeah, I always heard that as doe. I thought that was him saying doe. You heard won't all the time.
At our last live show said won't.
Damn. I'm so embarrassed. I always thought it was a doe reaction from Homer.
Well, thank you, Frinky Yak.
Thank you, Frinky Yak, for clearing that up.
See, Homer was like, he totally knew he was going to win.
Homer from like miles and miles away can hear Rex Banner quietly saying he will vow to get him. It makes no sense, and it's beautiful.
It's true. So Homer gets a garish new hat, as if to say, look at me, I have a new hat. And unfortunately, the beer runs out, and as most states, we're not sticking around for the ambience.
I love Homer. There's some great ambiance here, though, or ambience.
Ambience.
But Homer's reaction of like, call me Beer Baron. We're out of beer Baron. Well, I can't be out of beer. I'm the Beer Baron. Beer Baron is said three times in three sentences in a row.
It's a great thing to do as a writer. But the substitutes that Homer offers Mo are turpentine and, I'm quoting the episode, cock, delicious cock. They knew what they were doing.
They knew what they were doing with saying delicious cock. There was no two ways about it.
That has got to be somebody's ringtone in this room.
Delicious cock. Well, Homer says it so innocently that you can't think that it's meant to be a double entendre. He's like, delicious cock.
And so Homer orders 42 bathtubs instead of 50.
50 for 3,000, which that's a pretty good deal on bathtubs, I got to think.
It's a very odd deal on bathtubs.
I said 42. That scene can be deleted and the episode would not be any different, but it's great to see that they didn't choose to skip over that. It's more funny to see Homer choose to spend more money.
I'm sure it's cut out in syndication, though.
Yeah. But so then when Marge sees that she's finally having issues with it, that this is more illegal than before, and that's when we get another very dark joke on par with the freezer lady, where Homer says, we're just ignoring an unjust law like all those patriots who were in jail. Now, that line to me, it is about just anybody who breaks a law and goes to jail, but really, I am thinking that it is a reference to the Oklahoma City bombing, because that is what Timothy McVeigh called himself a patriot. Those guys called themselves patriots. On the commentary, even, they're like, I think they said they rewrote the line because the it was too obvious.
That does ruin it for me.
It does a little.
Patriots bit. Like all those people in jail.
Sorry to ruin a funny line.
Everyone in jail is a political prisoner.
I also love that the signs on his the alcohol he's making includes 12-year-old scotch, which is being made in a bathtub.
In less than 12 years.
In less than 12. That's the joke.
He's really expanding his operation. Like, there's all kinds of things to have. Like, there's like a tub for gimlets, too.
All he needed to make was beer. Homer is going above and beyond. Mo only asked for more beer. He just didn't want more beer.
Should be the beer and/or liqueur baron.
And also, then we get to see Rex Banner. His investigation is stopping people on the street and asking if they're the beer baron.
But he's still acting as if he's got this.
He's got it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've got this.
And he does lock up Ned Flanders.
Ned Flanders. He's gil-diddle-ilty as char-diddly-arge.
Goofballs, everybody. Goofballs.
And that also shows you how much Rex cares about the law, that he just is like, he just arrests Ned for no good reason. Meanwhile, Homer and Bart walk by with a literal wheelbarrow. No, not wheelbarrow.
Like a wagon
full of hops and barley.
And tequila worms.
Tequila worms.
Specifically tequila worms.
Not just any old worms.
Yes. So things start exploding at the Simpsons house now. And one of my favorite
Kaboom! Blammo!
One of the least likely things to cover up with your own voice are explosions. Homer tries.
And they go for a fart joke, which is very...
That's true.
That Homer... I also can't believe Homer would only eat one bean at dinner.
It must have been that bean I had.
Wouldn't he eat many beans? Why would he have just one bean?
It is a vegetable.
That's true. Yeah. But if you refry them, it's unhealthy as a non-vegetable, so...
But
that's why I eat him.
After catching on fire, he decides to give up this plan. Ultimately,
I love Marge's flatness of like your alcohol is exploding again. Kaboom, blammo, boom. Homer's just sad, boom, and I also got to give it to the sound mixer. They get so many different explosion sounds, like so. They have all those different explosions, so when it's the big one that almost kills Homer, it has a lot more power to it than the other one.
The screen does shake a lot more, too, and Homer is not on screen during that, I think. That's what sets him on fire, right?
Yes, yeah. So then Homer gives it up, and that's when he is about to be robbed by Wiggum, and poor Wiggum. And that I just love the nonsensicalness. It's a Schwarzwelder gag, it feels like, the nonsensicalness of you would pawn your entire gun. You would not pawn parts of your gun. No one wants to buy a trigger on a gun.
Yeah. Or a handle.
Or a handle.
But you can still kind of maybe fool. I mean, if you can't fool Homer into thinking you're mugging him, who are you going to fool?
You got to think Wiggum has mugged a lot of guys by this point. Think about that.
He can still throw it pretty hard.
I can still throw
the remnants of the gun.
And that he has changed into like pajama pants too, which is extra sad.
He's pretty disheveled and stain covered. Again, it's good that we don't see Ralph like, I eat newspaper now or whatever.
or seeing Sarah just sad.
Yes.
Sarah Wiggum, that's her official name, folks.
The little scene Sarah Wiggum.
So then Homer decides he's going to help out Wiggum. We cut to Rex Banner saying that he has defeated the Beer Baron, who was just a creation of the media anyway.
Yes, ignore those liquor clouds over Evergreen Terrace.
How could he not catch him?
My theory is for this, so Homer turns himself into Wiggum, too, so Wiggum can get his, his groove back, as it were. And I really want to say that I think Homer's repaying the favor because in Mother Simpson, Wiggum is who stops Mother Simpson from being arrested.
That is true, though. Homer didn't really catch that, though.
Yeah.
Maybe he found out later, but he is helping. He helped out poor Wiggum, and Homer's very know-it-all, like, I filled the balls with a funnel.
Yes.
It's just a great little addition. And also, I love Lenny's like, they captured Homer?
Everybody knows.
Everybody knew but Rex Banner.
Rex Banner.
Who can't even laugh at Rex Banner.
You know what laughter sounds like.
So Homer is going to get catapulted. They hog time and put him in it. It's a great just like smash back to what had previously been established. Catapulting is the punishment.
Yeah.
And everyone had forgotten that.
They dug the 200-year-old catapult out of storage. I don't know where it was, but
yeah, that's pretty amazing.
They do test it with a cat. They pulled a cat.
Kill a cat.
Yes, and you were talking, Henry, earlier that it is a callback to Call of the Simpsons, the camping episode.
Yeah, in season one, John Swartzwelder written episode, he kills a rabbit, if you remember the rabbit just gets flung far away when they try to catch it. It's a beautiful scene of animal cruelty.
Yeah, they spare us the thump of the animal hitting the ground, though, in this one.
In this one, yeah. And same with, speaking of cruelty, though, like, what happens to poor Rex Banner? Like, so Marge tries to prevent things by making the argument of, like, you had your freedom of not being hit by drunk drivers, but you lost your freedom to drink.
Yes, you know what's more important than safety? An idea. Mm-hmm. A concept.
Ideas are so much more important. And then Rex Banner again reveals that he would kill everyone if he
looked
weren't
at him
for laws.
Yeah.
Everyone who looked at him cockeyed. And then you really need to have a huge suspension of disbelief for him to walk onto the catapult for no reason and not realize it. Like, while he's walking, he has to walk onto the catapult and not realize it.
I mean, he is, despite his appearance and demeanor, he is very stupid.
Yes, yeah, that's true. And so he gets sent home to Mama, and no one cares that the Wiggum, Lou, and Eddie murder Rex Banner in front of everyone by catapult. And
it's true.
Wiggum just goes like, well, that was unexpected. Reload the catapult.
I mean, we don't see the remnants of the corpse as we do with Sherry Bobbins, who gets sucked into a jet engine. So maybe he landed on like a marshmallow factory.
And then that explodes.
Yeah, that we were spared that one more joke.
And so Homer's about to die, and that is when the magical clerk shows up again to read the rest of the parchment and make him realize that Prohibition ended 1 year after it started in Springfield.
It was repealed 1 year later.
199 years ago.
Yes. And this episode ends with a quote, which they actually moved to the very end. It was originally in the second act, but it was so good.
Whoa.
And if you go in any bar, you'll see it somewhere, written somewhere, embossed somewhere.
One of the greatest exit lines ever on the show.
By the way, no one vandalized this bar tonight. I did not mean to put that idea in your head.
But yes, it's to alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yes.
Woo!
And with that, go out and have some solutions tonight. No problems.
Yes, have only the solutions.
Before we go, we have our lovely artist Maddie over there. She's got a lot of merchandise. She can help you out. She's got stickers and pins and bookmarks and stuff.
Yeah, Maddie has done amazing work for us. If you've seen their new Talking Futurama stuff, she did the art for me and Bob's faces and heads and jars.
And she did the art for our new podcast, What a Cartoon, as well.
Yes, yeah. So thank you very much.
Yes.
And also, yeah,
one
thank
of these
you.
Mopins.
Oh, yeah, and the wonderful Mopins. And yes, also thank you to Piano Fight Bar for having us here.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We'll be all back, everybody. Thanks for coming out.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow. Infotainment.